From the campus of Winston-Salem State University, welcome to Future Focus Now, giving you great conversations with great guests from Winston-Salem State University and beyond. And now your host, WSSU Chancellor, Elwood L. Robinson.
My guest is Latita Smith. In September, she became the fifth president of Winston-Salem Foundation. Incoming President Latita Smith, as the Moses Taylor Foundation's first permanent president, she had the opportunity to build the $90 million Health Legacy Foundation's grant-making strategy and define its role in improving the health of a larger rural 11-county region in Northeast Pennsylvania. Her work in philanthropy includes experiences in shaping strategies in urban communities with 12 years at St. Luke's Foundation in Cleveland, Ohio, and 3 years directing federal grants for the Cleveland Department of Public Health. She was selected by the foundation's board after an extensive national search. In 2018, the foundation committed to advancing racial equity across all its work in Forsyth County and announced focused community investments in two key areas: building an inclusive economy and advancing equity in education. In addition to grant making, the foundation is prioritizing social and human capital by strengthening partnerships with local organizations and individuals with lived experience. The foundation's strategic initiatives, the Black Philanthropic Initiative and the Women's Fund of Winston-Salem, are also deeply aligned in this work. The foundation is resolutely working toward a vision for Winston-Salem where race no longer predicts life outcomes. She said, "I'm honored to be assuming this role. It's an exciting time in the history of Winston-Salem, and the Winston-Salem Foundation is in a unique position to ensure the entire community benefits and contributes to designing the innovation and investments that are sparking this resurgence. I'm eager to champion the foundation's commitment to racial equity and honored to leave a well-respected team dedicated to learning and authentic community engagement." She holds a Master of Arts in English and Women's Studies from The Ohio State University and a Bachelor of Arts in English and Women's Studies from Ohio Wesleyan University. She's a member of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority, Incorporated. Latita lives in Clemens, North Carolina with her husband, Walter, their son, Walter III, and daughter, Clark. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to Future Focus Now, Ms. Latita Smith.
Thank you so much, Dr. Robinson.
Thank you for joining me tonight on Future Focus Now. I am delighted that you are here in Winston-Salem. I am delighted that you're the new leader of the Winston-Salem Foundation. We get a chance to get into all of that in a few moments. But first of all, welcome to the show. And how are you tonight?
I'm wonderful. Thank you very much. You know, it's warming up some, so I feel like North Carolina is delivering on its promise to this northerner. It was a little cold for a while, and that was not what I had expected.
Well, it's one thing about living in the triad that you will find out. You know, if you don't like the weather, just wait a moment and it will change. But we're glad you're here. We're glad your family is here. When did you arrive in the city?
We moved at the beginning of August, so it's been a whirlwind. I started at the foundation September 1st. My kids started school at the end of August, so we still have some boxes at home, but we are getting acclimated to the area.
You're here. Were you familiar with the South, North Carolina? Is this a new experience for you? I read in your bio that you have a lot of northern and northeastern kinds of experiences.
Sure. So I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio. My husband grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So we are native Northerners. But my great grandmother is from Winston-Salem. So part of the cherry on top for me in coming to the foundation is that I had the opportunity to come back from a city that means a great deal to our family's story. My great grandmother actually moved to Cleveland around the time that the foundation was being established, when a lot of folks, African-American folks, were moving up north for economic opportunities. So it is very special for me to have the opportunity to come back here some 100 years later for an opportunity for myself and my family.
Wow. I mean, that's a really great story. I mean, it's like it was destined for you to be here and to come back at this particular time. You're in the Northeast, and this is an opportunity to come to North Carolina, to the Winston-Salem Foundation. What was it about the foundation, and what was it about Winston-Salem that you said, this is a place, you know, I'd like to, you know, have some roots?
So I've been in philanthropy for 18 years now, and in thinking about the work that excites me most, I've always had the opportunity to work in place-based philanthropy, so really organized around a community where I live, where my family lives, and you're really able to see the impact that philanthropy can have in helping to transform a community and strengthen the people who live within it. And so I've always been attracted to that kind of work. And I began doing that in Cleveland. I moved to Scranton, Pennsylvania for an opportunity to help establish a new foundation there. And we lived there for about 6 years and had a phenomenal time there. There are experiences my children had living in a rural community that they would have never gotten if we had stayed in Cleveland. However, in thinking about where we wanted our kids to grow up, my husband and I knew that Scranton, Pennsylvania was not that place. We wanted a more diverse community. We wanted a community with other kind of quality of life amenities, parks, arts and culture, a strong public education system. And so all of those were things that we wanted. And so I found with the Winston-Salem Foundation, as an established foundation dedicated to doing philanthropy in the ways that I think that it should be done, with a focus around community engagement, with an intention around the opportunities we have to advance racial equity. And then I found in this community the exact type of place where we were hoping our children could grow up. And so we've been delighted to get here and to make Forsyth County our home.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we think that this is a great place to live. We think this is a great place to have families. This is my seventh year in this community, although I'm a North Carolinian. I still have been here for 7 years. My children have now, well, at least one of them have certainly moved to Winston-Salem with her family. And then my grandkids are here. I have a 6-year-old, a granddaughter, and a 2-year-old grandson. As part of this community, like you, I think this is a special place to live. As we get into, we'll get into the work that you're doing at the foundation, but as you know, as Chancellor of Winston-Salem State University, it's important that we introduce our students to help, to whatever it takes to help them find their passion. And I can tell you, you've been in philanthropy for 18 years, and it certainly seems as though you found your passion. Take us through a pathway of getting there and a little bit about how you found your passion, because oftentimes what we tell students at Winston-Salem State University, that you will come and you may major in something and you may do something totally different. As once again, reflecting on your bio, I saw that you went to school not in foundation work and philanthropy, but in something else. But take us through finding your passion to where you are today.
Sure. When I entered undergraduate school at Ohio Wesleyan University, I actually majored in journalism because I thought that I wanted to be a reporter. At the root, I've always been excited about stories, telling stories and hearing people's stories. And so I think that I've just been on a path to figure out the right place to do that work. So I realized early on when I was in college that journalism just wasn't for me. I didn't like the idea of being forced to write on demand in that kind of way. And so over the course of the 4 years I was at Ohio Wesleyan, I shifted to a focus on English and women's studies. And I really loved Everything about English, about the writing, about studying stories, in particular autobiography, was of particular interest to me. And then women's studies gave me the opportunity to think about the consequences of who gets to tell their story and the power of storytelling. And so all of that really excited me when I was in college. And I decided to go to graduate school to study the same thing. My parents were not very excited about that. My mom was an accountant. My dad was a systems analyst, and they had no idea how I was going to make a living studying English and women's studies. But nonetheless, I was able to figure it out, and I got to graduate school at Ohio State. And I originally thought that I was going to get a PhD in English and women's studies and become a college professor. Luckily.
Oh, it's your time, and I may have an opening for you.
No way. But early on, I got the chance to teach at Ohio State. Now, granted, teaching freshman English and teaching like intro to women's studies is probably not a fair test of what like teaching at the college level is like. But nonetheless, I realized that teaching just wasn't for me. There was something for me that was missing. I love being in the classroom. I love what I was learning. But I think that there's like an art to being a good teacher that I just didn't have. Like the ability to convey a topic, to plant a seed in a student was never something that I could either learn to do well or particularly enjoyed. And so I realized that instead of getting a PhD, I was just going to get master's degrees, just do a thesis and get out and start working and figure out what excited me. So I got out of graduate school. I worked for Planned Parenthood for a year. That wasn't a good fit for me, but it seemed like a place where I could use my women's studies education. And then I landed at the Cleveland Department of Public Health, and I was overseeing their AIDS grants, which was like a natural transition from Planned Parenthood. But it was my first kind of foray into understanding philanthropy of sorts. And so at that time, the Cleveland Health Department received about $3 million a year in AIDS funding. So it was funding for prevention education to help people avoid getting HIV, and then some services or some funding for services for people living with AIDS. And although it was my job to distribute that money, I was also the city's unofficial like AIDS czar. And so it was my job to kind of be the person at the city of Cleveland who would sit at the intersection of government and our healthcare system and the school system and community leaders and churches and advocates and think about how the city was going to respond to AIDS. And it was an interesting time. It was like in the late 90s. And so we had moved away from HIV being thought of as like a white gay man's disease to increasingly being a disease of people of color and of women. And so it was really my job to figure out how the city was going to use not only its resources, but also its influence to make a significant dent in this crisis in our community. And I absolutely loved it. It was the hardest thing I've ever done, but it was infinitely rewarding. It was challenging every day. And I thought, what an extraordinary privilege to have as my job, being responsible for thinking about how the city can do right by this community when it comes to this disease. And so I knew I wasn't going to forever work in the city, because I think that working in city government takes a special kind of person, and I'm not that kind of person.
You ruled out teaching, you ruled out governmental work. Yes. So we're just ruling stuff out, right?
Yes. Well, you know, your 20s.
Yeah, and but you're having a great experience, and it sounds like part of that great experience is being able to work with multiple entities, multiple groups, and thinking about how we look at a common issue, a common problem. Was it the content, or was it the work of building partnerships and collaborations?
It was certainly the latter, the partnerships and the collaborations. And it was the skills that I realized that I had around listening, around synthesizing information, and thinking about making meaning of all the data that I was gathering. I realized that all of that were things I learned in the classroom that I could use in a very different context and really not only be successful, but it was something that I really, really enjoyed. And so once I found philanthropy, I never looked back.
I mean, you find this, and certainly it's been rewarding to you. And as you talk about it, you know, I get the sense of your passion and excitement. It's one thing to be involved in that. It's another thing to rise to the level of being a CEO or presidency. Take us through that. Take our listeners and our students who are interested in how did she start there and then end up, and we're going to talk about that in just a moment, you know, as president of the oldest, you know, community foundation in North Carolina.
Yeah, so certainly I didn't start out thinking that this was the path. I love being a program officer. I love talking to people and coming up with good grant ideas. And I did that for many, many years and got great pleasure out of it. And then I recognized that there were other opportunities to have a different kind of influence. So there's one influence around cultivating good grants. There's another level of influence around determining how the dollars are spent. And with each new role that I took on, I realized there was an opportunity for a greater level of influence. And always with the idea of how do I create more opportunity for folks? How do I get more voices around the table? And so it wasn't that I desired influence like for my own benefit, but I saw the opportunity to really, activate my will to do philanthropy in the way that I thought that it should be done. And that's something that has continued to excite me as I've grown in leadership.
Yeah, well, great. I want you to talk a little bit more about your women's studies. I mean, because you're in women's studies, and so that's certainly an important area to be in. You come to Winston-Salem and you are a leader. And what I've noticed is that we have a number of new female CEOs and leaders in the city. Susan Wente, president at Wake Forest University. Summer McGee, president at Salem College and Academy. Tricia McManus, superintendent. Now you as part of this city. I mean, so as we think about navigating, and you talked about some of the pathways, young women out there who want to become CEOs and presidents, take us through the whole idea of your concept and idea about leadership and how the kinds of experiences that you had both in college and now, how you use those experiences to empower girls and women.
Sure. So as you indicated, representation matters. It matters that I am a woman in this role. It matters that I'm an African-American in this role. And when you see those images of leadership, then it expands your understanding of what is possible. When I think about what it means for me to be a woman in this role, I think that we have the opportunity to demonstrate leadership in non-traditional ways. So certainly, I've always had a commitment to collaboration. I think that that ends up being a natural way that women often work. And so I think that it requires a different skill set. It's a different kind of a strength. It doesn't look the same way. It's not, it doesn't show up in the same kind of way that some traditional models of leadership may show up. But I've always tried to think about how I can really operate from my own strength, using listening as a strength, as opposed to overt kind of proclamations that may be considered a more male approach to communication. But that's always been very important to me.
I love that. And you know, what I love is that you embrace that and that becomes a part of who you are. But I'm wondering if in fact, when you do that, what are the challenges? Because most of the models that we have out there, in my opinion, this is just in my opinion, are male models, however you want to conceptualize that, but there are models that have existed for a long time. And as we get more and more folks into these roles, more people with different kinds of identities, there's an opportunity for transformation. And what I hear you, and you can correct me and if I'm wrong, is that you see it as an opportunity to change the traditional leadership models in ways by embracing who you are and your identity.
Absolutely. You know, being a new leader, a lot of times people will ask me, you know, what is your vision or what are the five things that you think need to happen in Winston-Salem right now? And I'm very confident in saying, I do not know, because I just got here 2 months ago and I came from Cleveland by way of Scranton. And so I have a lot to listen. I have a lot of folks to listen to and a lot to learn. And it takes a level of confidence to be able to say that. You know, I'm okay saying that I don't have the answers, that I'm looking to others to help me get different pieces of the puzzle to form an understanding of what's happening in this community. You know, because of where I sit, I have the ability to say that, but I know that that's not easy. At the same time, I know it's important to say those things in order to embody a different kind of leadership.
Yeah, fantastic. And so you have been in this city for a couple months, and you've had a chance to meet all kinds of folks. I happened to be on a conference with you earlier, late last week, when you were communicating to a bunch of folks, bunch of leaders in Winston-Salem. Tell me a little bit about the 2 months you've been here. What are some of the things that you have seen and experienced that has caught your attention?
Well, it has been a whirlwind. You know, the foundation has a host of donors, of nonprofit partners, of colleague funders, of community stakeholders who have been volunteers for us. And I've been trying to do my best to make the rounds still in this time of, you know, hopefully the end of COVID, but get an opportunity to connect with the foundation's many different stakeholders. You know, one of the biggest differences for me being here as opposed to the other places where I have practiced philanthropy is that I have come into this 102-year-old institution. And so this foundation has a strong track record of trust, of partnership, of collaboration that I get to benefit from. So I'm not in the business of having to help people understand what philanthropy can do or the value that we bring. They get it already. It was happening well before I got here, but I'm really excited to think about how I make it even more relevant today.
Yeah, I mean, and we're looking forward to the collaborations, working with you. Certainly Winston-Salem State University is a high priority for me. It has been something that we have found to be really valuable. A lot of people who work at Winston-Salem State University have a connection to many of the programs at the foundation. The foundation has always been sort of great supporters for us. What were one or two selling points for you accepting the position? I know you talked a little bit about, you know, having some family members here, moving to the South. But what really sold you on coming to Winston-Salem? Because I'm going to talk a little bit about the history and the work that I think that we can do going forward.
So first of all, it would have to be the foundation's commitment to racial equity. And, you know, last year was a year that a whole bunch of folks said they were committed to racial equity. But this was a foundation that had been doing deep work, both the board and the staff, for multiple years and really examining what does it mean for a 102-year-old institution to take on racial equity as a core component to our work. And so the truthfulness and honesty with which my colleagues had been engaged in that work showed me that this was a place where we could really walk the talk. And so I was excited about being part of helping them to make that happen. And then I would say also the commitment to real community engagement. So for the past several years, the foundation has thought about what are the key roles that we can play in the community. They've been really thoughtful about having a variety of conversations with a variety of stakeholders and really letting the community tell us where we could have the greatest impact. And to me, that is the true goal of a community foundation, to represent the needs and the desires of the community. And so all of that were reasons where this felt like the kind of place where I could do the work that matters most to me.
Yeah, and in many ways, when we look at Winston-Salem, while we both have said our experiences so far have been great experiences, this city is a tale of two cities. And it has been a tale of two cities for a very long time. Before I became chancellor in 2015, happened to have been provost at Cambridge College in Massachusetts. And before I came, I read this report that came out in Harvard. A group of Harvard scientists talked about if you were born in Forsyth County, it was the third most difficult county to escape poverty in America, which to me was it floored me. I happened to be reading that report in bed. And it's one of those reports when you read, you kind of sit up in bed. You said, this is really unbelievable. Because if you think, Latita, back at one point, Winston-Salem had one of the highest per capita incomes of any city in the South.
And yes.
Because of the size of the city, with having several Fortune 500 companies here. And so you got this huge disparity between the haves and the have-nots. And it has historical reference, but it's something that has vestiges even today. And so as we think about the work of the foundation, how do you see the foundation as continuing that equity work and then telling the story where all of our citizens in this community realize that they are also part of the vision that you have and that you guys will be crafting and continue to craft at the foundation?
That's so important. You know, I had the opportunity last Saturday to attend a magnet school fair for the school district. I was really excited to hear about the wealth of opportunities available in our school district because I have two children who are in the school district and I know a little bit about what's available, but I wanted to learn more. And I was really blown away with the diversity and range of the educational opportunities that exist for free for kids in our district. And yet at the same time, I know that even though those opportunities are available, that access really varies significantly, often based on race, almost always based on income. And that creates real disparities in opportunities that should be available for our whole community. And so it's something that I think about all the time. You know, part of what the foundation has begun doing is work to really help to ensure that as we're having these conversations about the challenges that exist in our community, that we're really understanding the root causes of those challenges. We worked in partnership with the library system and many other nonprofits across the community to bring the national Undesign the Red Line exhibit here to Winston-Salem. Wow. And that exhibit tells the story of redlining in the United States. So, you know, in the 1930s, housing policy was developed that determined that graded neighborhoods according to race. And even though those policies that were established in the 1930s were subsequently abolished, the ongoing legacy of those neighborhoods and how they determined what neighborhoods were going to get housing loans, what neighborhoods were going to be invested in, continue to reflect the educational outcomes, the healthcare outcomes and disparities that we see now. And so for us at the foundation, we think that by helping people see those root causes of problems, then they're less apt to look at a neighborhood and say, what happened there? Or how come nobody is investing there? It's like this began almost 100 years ago with housing policies that we never corrected, that we put Band-Aids on without addressing the root causes of. And so hopefully then we could change the conversation and help people understand these problems in a much more nuanced way. And then we can identify better solutions.
Yeah. I mean, and that's great and that's wonderful. We continue to have those discussions and really try to demystify a lot of the work, I think, of foundations. How do you, when you travel and you'll be doing a lot of traveling and you started out, you know, wanting to be a journalist and storytellers, and now I'm sure you're a great storyteller. How do you present foundation work to all of our citizens, to those groups who might not understand what a foundation does and the importance of a foundation? How do you talk to them?
So there are a lot of different kinds of foundations. I actually started my career in health foundations. So they were private foundations that were established from the sale of hospitals. There are, as you know, foundations that were established by individuals. I have the benefit of working for, as you mentioned, the oldest community foundation in the state of North Carolina, still one of the 50 largest community foundations in the country. But community foundations were established over 100 years ago, actually in Cleveland. And they were established by folks who were interested in pooling together their resources in order to help transform a community. And so the idea back then that remains true today is that the Community Foundation is there to not only help individuals with their personal giving, and individuals choose to give to their alma maters, they may choose to give to their houses of worship, they may choose to give to causes that they care about or institutions like the arts that they want to strengthen. Or individuals may say, we want to pool our resources together to help address whatever challenges that are present in the community today or challenges that may be present in the community down the road. And so we exist as a foundation to provide multiple vehicles for the community to give either collectively or individually to help strengthen Forsyth County. And so we have, we give out over 600 scholarships a year because we have a wealth of donors who are interested in supporting students in that way. We work with multiple nonprofits who partner with us to sustain their endowments. We work with individual donors. We work with groups of donors. And so we work flexibly in a variety of ways to help the community reach its philanthropic aims.
Yeah, great. And when you looked at the foundation, Winston-Salem Foundation, and you looked at their portfolio, all the things they were involved in, what were one or two things that you looked at? You said, I'm glad that's here. And tell us a little bit about what you might be thinking adding to that portfolio.
So one of the things I've been most excited about are collective giving vehicles. So you mentioned in your introduction that the foundation works in partnership with the Black Philanthropy Initiative and with our Women's Fund. And those are opportunities where groups of folks come together in the community to give, but also to learn together about issues that they care about and to think about where they want to invest their resources. And so really it breaks down this notion that philanthropy is only something that highly wealthy people can do. Really through the Black Philanthropy Initiative or through the Women's Fund, you can bring $100 or you can bring your time and your talent and come together to help think about how we invest these resources. And so I am so excited that that's part of the way that we're doing our work. I think that's the way that we continue to open up philanthropy to more and more people. And so I continue to think about who else is left out of those equations. So we have a growing Latinx community in Forsyth County. How are we thinking about how we serve them? Is there an opportunity to do a similar kind of collective giving model? Is there some other model that better supports the way that people in those communities desire to give and work together? And so that is certainly something that's top of mind for me.
Yeah, and giving is so much a part of the human experience to give. And you said something, there is a tendency that philanthropy is for the wealthy. And that's one of the things I really want to kind of demystify, that myth. A mentor of mine, Charlie Nims, who was chancellor at North Carolina Central, always said that everybody can be a philanthropist. But that perspective is not something that people are very familiar with. Why is it important to give, and how can everyone be a philanthropist?
Yeah, you know, I think that when people think of philanthropy, they think of the institution. And so they think of institutions and they think of folks like Carnegie or Rockefeller, and they become synonymous with philanthropy. But truly, I mean, when you think about the notion of collective responsibility, that is deeply rooted in African-American communities, deeply rooted in Latinx and Hispanic communities. We have always had a culture of taking care of one another, of giving, not out of our wealth, but out of whatever we had in order to ensure that we all had enough. And so I think that when we think about giving, instead of the institution of philanthropy, we can recognize the ways that, you know, philanthropy runs in our genes, and it's always been a part of the way that we do our work. We just don't always think of it in that way.
Yeah, I mean, it's so much a part of the human spirit, right? Is to give. And actually, giving has health benefits. You know that, right? Because, if you feel better about yourself, I mean, when you give of your time and your talents and your energy, and that's important. Let's look at all the things that you do, and let's take a quick look at community leadership. It says, what does the Winston-Salem Foundation do? Community leadership. What is that?
Sure. You know, I often think that the influence that we have is way more powerful than the resources that we have, because we have the ability to call a whole lot of folks around the table to talk about issues that are important. So we have access to city and county leadership, to institutions of higher education like yourself, to business leaders, to the healthcare sector and nonprofit partners. And we have the ability to call them together and have vital community conversations. And so that to me is what I see as one of the strongest assets that we have at our disposal. And so thinking about when we do that and how we do that and to what end is an important part of how we think about our work.
Yeah, community grants. You give out community grants. One of the things that you will hear very soon is when we roll out our new strategic plan, it really is about unleashing the genius in every single student. And so we're getting heavily involved in the creative space. You know, we want folks to build their own businesses. Mm. I know the entering class this year that when they graduate in 4 years, I want them to have a diploma in one hand and a business plan in the other. You know, so we're getting into that space. We'll be coming to the Winston-Salem Foundation to assist and help us in that endeavor. But talk about community grants. A lot of folks out there with ideas, a lot of folks out there who want to make a real difference in the world, and they need capital to be able to do that. I'm assuming when I look at your community grants, that's one of the things that you do.
Absolutely. So we have a focused commitment at the foundation to advancing equity in education and building an inclusive economy. And a lot of our grant making focuses on those core areas. But at the same time, like I mentioned, we are the community's foundation. And so we want to be available to a wide variety of nonprofits who are doing vital work in healthcare and basic services in the arts, in the environment, in a whole range of areas that contribute to the health and vibrancy of our community. And so we do that through community grant making. We invest in capacity building to help nonprofits strengthen their effectiveness. We invest in small grants where we're often working with more grassroots nonprofits. We also provide capital grants where we're providing vital infrastructure support to a host of nonprofits so that they're able to better activate their mission. And so it's always been important to us that even as we have a particular focus, that we're always available to being in broader partnership with nonprofits across our community.
Yeah. Philanthropic services. You offer, what are philanthropic services?
So philanthropic services is the way that we work in partnership with donors. So we work in partnership with a variety of donors to support their philanthropic aims and to assist them in identifying the best vehicles for contributing to the foundation. So be that scholarship funds, be that donor advised funds, it could be funds that support the foundation's unrestricted work or funds that support a field of interest like arts or education. We have a variety of vehicles available to partner with donors to help them meet their philanthropic goals.
And we're so excited, Denise and myself, we have a donor advisory fund. It's very small, so don't get excited, all you listening people out there. But I mean, it's so convenient. I mean, we can our gifts, you know, we can track it. We can do everything online. And so it's really convenient for us to be able to give and to be able to track our giving. And so we're proud to be have a fund there as well. I'm going to tell you in terms of the last one, in terms of student aid, and this is a story, and it's one of the most amazing stories at Winston-Salem State University when I got here in 2015. When I got here in 2015, Latita, we had about 300 students who were with us in the fall who did not return in the spring. And those students had an average GPA of 2.8 or higher and had completed 90 plus hours. And so here I am, a new chancellor, and I get this, you know, I get this data and I get these numbers, and I'm wondering, you know, why these students aren't completing when they've demonstrated one that can do the work.
Sure.
The GPA, and they've completed the hours. So it's not about not being able to do the work. And so it had to be, you know, something else. It really was about, you know, financial. We got a grant from the Winston-Salem Foundation to be able to do kind of partway home scholarships for students. And that semester, my first semester here, we awarded 30 of such grants to students. 29 of those students graduated. 29 of those students graduated because of that. We subsequently have started extending that. And I, over the past 3 years, we've given out about 170 of those almost home or partway home scholarships, and 167 students have graduated.
Wow.
It really tells you the power of small grants, small scholarships to be able to make a difference, particularly for students who come from under-resourced families. And as you may or may not know, about 70% of our students are Pell eligible, which means that they come from families that make less than $50,000, certainly less than $75,000. And one of the things that I found out just recently, about 17% of our students come from families that make less than $25,000 a year.
Wow.
If you think about how difficult it is, anything can happen when life happens, something can happen in your family, and it can derail you from being able to complete your education. And so I tell that story to you because as a new president of the foundation, understanding that that partnership is one of the most amazing, you know, partnerships that we've had, and it's a great story. And I tell that story often.
Thank you so much. I mean, we know that education continues to be the primary way that individuals and family are able to really create a pathway to economic opportunity. And so we've been very proud to have the ability to work in partnership with Winston-Salem State and many other institutions across our community to provide vital scholarships for partners in our community.
Yeah, you know, fantastic. And tell us a little bit more about building an inclusive economy, because I think that's critical. Tell us a little bit about your thinking and your work in that area.
Sure. So my colleagues at the foundation have done a lot of work around identifying, you know, what are the things that get in the way of families, but in particular families of color, from having an economically stable home and from really having high rates of economic mobility. And we identified that some of the areas that we could invest in that would really make a difference in making our economy more inclusive would be supporting pathway to family sustaining careers, looking at things like the benefits cliff and other things that often get in the way of people advancing economically. We've been doing a lot of work around identifying opportunities to really make a difference in debt reduction. So looking at student loan debt, looking at fines and fees, you know, like you said, often it's those things that may seem little to you or I that get in the way of families really building economic momentum. And then we've also been doing a lot of work, and we have an RFP out right now around transportation and really looking at how we help to supplement public transportation and what are those opportunities that are really going to help families get the support that they need in order to gain employment and also just have some self-sufficiency. So those are the particular, you know, an inclusive economy is a big old bucket, but within that, those are the areas that we've really pinpointed for investment, working with nonprofit partners to help move the needle in Forsyth County.
Yeah, and so much of that work is central to the work that we do at Winston-Salem State with our CSIMs. We've been, you know, trying to look at, you know, what are those barriers that prohibit individuals from economic and social mobility. And that's, we think that that's the work that's important to be able to do that. And that's one of the reasons why our students have been so successful, is that we get them, we provide them with the support that they need in order to be successful. They graduate in a reasonable amount of time, and then they go out into the economy, hopefully to get a job. Now we want them not only to just get a job, we want them to create a job, and it changes the trajectory of their families. Particularly if you think about coming from first generation, and that, as I described to you, the families that these students come from, it really is about a couple things. One, getting a job, sustaining that job. It's about home ownership. It's about really helping folks think about creating wealth. And I don't know if that's something that's on your bucket list, but it's something that I have at Winston-Salem State really started getting folk to begin focus on. And I want to say it. I mean, I don't think that wealth is a dirty word. I mean, I want people to embrace that and to say, we're going to create wealth.
Yes.
Because, you know, you and I know we've been in this business for a while. We know the disparities, the racial disparities in this country. We know that, you know, so I'm trying to make a difference in that area. Mm-hmm. I believe the foundation also has a part to play in that as well.
Absolutely. I mean, I would absolutely agree. We also don't think that wealth is a dirty word. We don't think that you need to start there in order to contribute to philanthropy. But certainly we recognize that it is important.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Let me ask you a couple things. As you have, you know, your predecessor, you know, Scott Wehrman.
Yes.
So I need to tell you about Scott Wehrman. So Scott, okay. When I came to this city, Scott served on my board of trustees, and so I, you know, had access to him, and he was able to have conversations with me about the work that's going on at the foundation. And I also would work out with Scott early in the morning, about 5 a.m., you know, 5:30. I guess my question to you, Latita, do you plan on picking up on some of this?
Well, I tell you, my friend, there are many differences between me and my predecessor. One of them is that I am a mom of an 11-year-old and an 8-year-old. And the thing I'm doing at 5:30 is sleeping and getting ready to get them ready in the morning. So you won't see me there, but I am always here and anxious to partner.
You know, that's wonderful. I just kidding. I had to throw that out because of that relationship. And it's a great relationship that we had. And I look forward to really getting to know you better and meeting your family and your children. I think that's so important to us, Denise and I, as Chancellor and First Lady of Winston-Salem State University. So we certainly will make that happen. Before we close, a couple of other areas I want to get into in terms of philanthropy. How, in your opinion, because you've been in this space for about 18 years now, what have you noticed and what has been the changes over that time in terms of philanthropy in this country?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I've seen most recently is that philanthropy at large is becoming much more critical of itself and how it does its work. And so it's not just enough to attempt to do good. It matters how you do the work that you're doing. And so increasingly, there are calls for foundations to think about how we are really engaging community, how we are really walking the talk, how we are bringing people with lived experience into our walls, into our boardrooms, and insisting that that is a vital competency that we must have to do our work well, that we can't just be kind and generous folks sitting around the table, but we really need to be folks with lived experience who understand intimately the challenges that we're looking to address. And so I'm excited about that. I'm excited that this foundation is also thinking about how it does more of that. I think that sharing power is not easy, especially for a 102-year-old organization, but we have a desire to think about how we do that. And so I'm excited to help them figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, when we look at some of the changes that have happening, particularly over the past 2 years, philanthropy has changed a great deal, and some of it is around racial equity. And I listened to some CEOs talk, and I've listened to people talk about this moment, whether indeed this is just a moment in time, or is it a true change? Is it a movement? And when we think about the work and the philanthropy that has gone into racial equity, How do you see it? Do you see it as it's a moment, or are people really changing in regards to that? You and I had this conversation, started out this conversation by talking about the work of the foundation and the space they have been in for a while in this area. Mm-hmm. So a little bit being a leader kind of in this area. Is what we've seen over the past 2 years, is it sustainable?
So I think that, you know, I certainly hope it's a movement, but I work with an urgency like it's a moment. Because you never know how long you will have.
Can I write that down? I like that.
You never know how long you will have people's attention. You never know what their appetite for results will be. And so I think that, you know, this is a moment. My being here is a moment, and I don't want to waste it. And so to the degree that we can get people excited about this work, that we can direct them to tangible ways of demonstrating their commitment to this work, I feel an urgency to really act on that right now, because it could be a moment that passes. And so we are in it for the long haul, but I am under no assumptions that the broader community, and by that I mean, like, you know, that our country is in it for the long haul. And so what do we do in this moment? You know, our neighbors just south of here in Charlotte just announced last week a $250 million racial equity fund that they raised. So to me, that's, you know, really an effort to capitalize on this moment. And so I don't know what that looks like for us, but it's something that I think about every day.
You know, absolutely. And I shared this. I think I shared this with the mayor. If I haven't, I will. Because when the mayor of Charlotte, when they made that announcement, I happened to be with her a couple of weeks ago, and I was telling her how amazing that was. By virtue of you coming and being in the seat that you're in at the foundation, you certainly have inherited an HBCU, which is Winston-Salem State University. And we have seen what has happened as people have begun thinking differently about HBCUs and the giving and the philanthropy to HBCUs. How do you see your role as president of the Winston-Salem Foundation assisting in that effort, and maybe working with some of those entities that might want to give? And how do you feel like we could work collectively together to make this more than a moment?
Yeah, well, I'm really excited to think more about that. I mean, specifically looking at the model in Charlotte, I know that they have centered a great deal of that work around their partnership with their local HBCU. And so, you know, as we continue as a community to prioritize education, as we continue to prioritize economic mobility, you've already mentioned so much of the work that you're committed to doing at Winston-State University is at the intersection of those two things. And so I see great opportunities for us to work together to capitalize on the community's commitment to racial equity in a real tangible way and make the kind of investments like we've seen them make in Charlotte that help to bolster the HBCU and increase its capacity to deliver for future generations opportunities for to reduce the disparities that exist in that community.
Yeah. And lastly, Latita, how do people, if they want to work directly with the foundation, if they want to become, have a donor advisory fund or whatever they want to do, how do they do that? How do they connect with the foundation?
Absolutely. So we are here every day and willing to have conversations or calls with people who just want to know, you know, what are the multiple options? Maybe you're thinking about a scholarship. Maybe you're thinking that you really want to support an organization that you value, or you just have an idea about a legacy that you want to leave. So we're happy to have those conversations with individual donors. And then we do have those opportunities for people who want to work in partnership with other donors. So our Women's Fund, our Black Philanthropy Initiative, are opportunities where people often will get their feet wet in philanthropy and have the opportunity to pull their resources together and think about how they can contribute to larger efforts that are moving the needle around some important issues in our community.
Great. And lastly, what can we look forward to in the coming months from the foundation? Are there signature moments, signature events that we should pay attention to, we should put on our calendar? What should we look forward to from the Winston-Salem Foundation?
Well, we don't have any moments or dates yet to share, but we're really, really hoping that we can resume in 2022, a number of the signature community events that have been important to the foundation. So we normally hold a large community luncheon. We're also often holding other gatherings for our donors, for our nonprofit partners. And we've been on hiatus from all of that for the past 18 months or so. But we're hoping the rates of COVID continue to go in the right direction and we'll be able to resume those activities in the new year.
Well, great. I mean, it's been such a pleasure. Thanks for spending time for me. You've been here for 2 months now. What's the favorite, one of your favorite foods? Have you been introduced to any new foods since you've been here?
A new food? Certainly I have my favorite restaurants.
You've already got some favorites that you go to?
Oh, certainly, yes. So lots of favorite restaurants, although I tell you with kids, sometimes our options are limited. But we love going to places like Chin Chin. We love Sweet Potatoes. Moselle's is a favorite place right in the neighborhood of the foundation. But then also, we're not afraid to travel around. We've been to restaurants in Greensboro and Charlotte. So we're getting the opportunity to get out and about across the region.
Yeah, well, we got to get you and your family over to Winston-Salem State University. You got to come over to a basketball game. Got to get you in the game center, introduce you to the WSSU experience. Thank you so much for joining me tonight. It has been my pleasure. Look forward to working with you in the future in terms of making this community the best that it can possibly be. And we're glad you're here.
Thank you. It's been my honor.
All right. And thank you, everyone, for joining us tonight on Future Focus Now. We'll be back again next week for another edition of Future Focus Now. So long. Good night, everybody.